Hello, welcome to the Sex Anne podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to have fulfilling sexual relationships with ourselves and others. I am Megan Arbaez, a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Washington, and this is episode number 24. Content warning. This podcast is suggested for adults 18 and older, as we are talking about mental health, sex, and sharing stories often rooted in sexual trauma. For the adults listening, some parts of this episode may be difficult to listen to. Please take care of yourself and take a break from the episode if you need to. All right, here we go. Hello, Lindsay. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
And for people who are curious about you, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Lindsay. I live in San Diego, California. I am originally from Houston. I found my way to California about 3 years ago, almost in September. It'll be 3 years, which is so wild, but I love it here. So basically, I'm a nurse. I'm a full-time nurse. I am a plant lady. I am a new dog mom.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I just adopted a senior dog. She's 10 years old. Her name is Sabrina.
Oh, she's an old dog. I didn't realize that. I love old dogs.
They're so sweet. Yes. Yeah. So she's super sweet. I love her. And I'm also alcohol free or sober or free spirited. And my intention of claiming that I'm this free spirit is I show and teach people how to live a free spirited life by being free of alcohol. And my true free spirited journey began about a year and 7 months ago when I made the decision to stop drinking. And I never really thought it would persist this long. And that date is December 18th, 2018. And yeah, I only thought I was going to give up alcohol for a month and then go back to my old ways. And the universe had other plans for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, what was the decision for you to be sober? I know you say you weren't sure how long it was going to last, but like there must have been like a point where you're like, okay, this is it. And it was able to stay that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great question. So actually I would say that my relationships suffered the most when I was drinking. I wasn't the type of drinker who would come home every night and, you know, kill a bottle of vodka. My arson was basically binge drinking. So I would find myself going out with friends or even just coming home after a long day of work and, you know, drinking almost a bottle of wine to myself. But then when I would go out, I would drink heavily and I wouldn't really know how to stop. There was no filter at all. So my relationship suffered the most, especially my intimate relationships. I found myself I didn't have the best relationship with myself at the time when I was in these relationships and I was using alcohol to cope. And in turn, it was wreaking havoc in my relationships. So I remember this was my ex and I, got into a really big fight on December 16th. And I realized just because I had a lot of insecurity issues, some jealousy, I would use alcohol to cope and then I would binge drink and we'd get in fights and it would kind of escalate. So essentially I remember just waking up December 17th and my boyfriend at the time, he told me, Lindsay, I think you need to take a break from alcohol. And this wasn't the first time that I heard this. And I remember hearing a voice and that voice said, Lindsay, if you don't stop, you're going to keep putting yourself in these same situations. So I remember waking up December 18th and I said, okay, I'm just going to give up alcohol for a month. And I slowly started feeling better. My anxiety got better. I I love to educate myself, and I'm more of a, okay, why am I doing this type of person? And I educate myself as opposed to just saying like, okay, no, I can't drink. So essentially, long story short, I feel like I'm rambling, but long story short, I knew something needed to change. And during that month, so many things opened up for me. And I realized I can't go back to drinking. I can't. So here I am.
So with some time away from alcohol, it sounds like your emotional, mental, physical space started to clear up, and you were able to see things in a different way and realize like, oh wait, this isn't healthy for me. It's hindering me. There's so much more potential that I can have without the alcohol, either in relationships or in my everyday life. And it felt good. You enjoyed that time without alcohol, and it was worth it. Like, weighing out the pros and cons of going back to drinking or staying free-spirited, it just felt more fulfilling and gratifying for you to stay free-spirited and take care of yourself in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely, like, you solidified all of that. Yeah, thank you. That's exactly how I felt. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned questioning, like, why am I doing this? And what ideas for why came into your mind at that time, or as you've continued to grow through this journey?
Yeah, so, you know, alcohol was kind of in my household. Alcohol is pretty prevalent in my household. And I grew up, I was kind of a goofy, awkward kid growing up, and I never really fit in anywhere. I was all kind of like got teased and picked on. And of course that led to insecurities. And then also my household, I had both parents in my household, but my dad was a heavy drinker, and sometimes his, you know, drinking would escalate and it would create issues, and my parents would fight, and it would scare me. So essentially, as I got older, I remember taking my first sip of alcohol at 16, and I almost felt like I was quote unquote confident. And I was like, wow, like, I'm not stressed about anything. I can just be myself. I'm not anxious myself, quote unquote, but mm-hmm. I'm not anxious. I feel like free, and I can be who I want to be, and I fit in. And that's kind of what led to me like increasing my alcohol intake. As I got older, I noticed that I was just using alcohol to cope and cover a lot of issues that I needed to deal with from my childhood, also with previous relationships that were kind of carrying over into my other relationships. And alcohol was there for me. It was like almost alcohol was my best friend. Alcohol was there when I had a bad day, when I had a bad breakup. Alcohol was there after a long shift at work. And truth be told, I was covering up a lot of issues that I was struggling with alcohol. And I think that's like kind of what fueled that fire for me and why I continued to drink. And as the years persisted, I started drinking more heavily because I was covering up a lot of things.
At the point before you became sober on December 18th, how much alcohol were you drinking when you were having your binge days?
Yeah. So I was having, it was more so, especially like if I went out with friends, you know, one beer would lead into two or three, and then someone would talk, you know, like bring up shots, and I would have a shot. And by that fourth drink, I had no control. I mean, even by the third drink, it was just, I had no control. And I would go out sometimes and say, okay, I'm only gonna have two beers. And the two beers would lead to five beers, two or three shots, another mixed drink. It was like, how do I even do that? And you know, and I put myself in so many scary situations, Megan. I remember I like went to, because I live in San Diego, we're so close to like Mexico. I went to TJ or Tijuana with a group of girls on like a beer tour, and we drank all day, we drank at night, and I drove us home from Tijuana.
Wow.
Yes, and it's crazy to me because, yeah, when I would go out, it was just, the drinks were limitless. Like there was just, there was no number. So it was like five or six plus.
I'm curious. So like, for example, you drove drunk back to California from Mexico. What was it like when you sobered up and realized, like, more, had more awareness that that happened? What thoughts or, like, feelings came up for you?
I honestly, I don't know what it was. I just didn't have good discernment, even when I was sobered up. I mean, I would think about it the next day and just say, like, oh, man, like, that was pretty dumb. I probably shouldn't have done that. But I didn't, it was like, it didn't even faze me. It was kind of like, okay, close call. Like nothing happened. I can still like go about my, you know, like escapades and be fine. Mm-hmm. So I kind of brushed it off. But now that I'm sober, I look back on that and I like saw videos and I was like driving and taking videos of me and my friends. And I was just like, wow, this, I could have killed somebody, you know, or killed myself.
So at the time, it was easy to brush it off or justify it, explain it away as like, oh, you know, that was silly, and not really take on the full responsibility. Because I think maybe, at least at that point in your life, like really feeling that responsibility would be really heavy, like having that reality check of just like what that means to put yourself in these risky situations, especially as like in driving or as a woman, in an unknown, unfamiliar place to you. Like there's a lot of different factors that went into that where things could have gone wrong, that being able to have clear judgment would have left you in a better situation. But, but I imagine also like at the time, the pros was that you were having a great time and it was fun. And at some point, like, decision-making is just like out the window after a couple of beers and a few shots.
Yeah, exactly. And I struggled with social anxiety too, as well. So whenever I would, this would also kind of fuel the fire and led me to binge drink. I would just feel so out of place. And I felt like, okay, I need to have like two or three drinks so I can open up and be and not feel as anxious. So that was another reason why I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go out, have fun. You know, I need this to like loosen up to help with my social anxiety. And yeah, at the time it was just like a good time. And it was like, okay, it was silly, but I need this. I need this for my social anxiety. I need this for my confidence. And that's like what my mentality was.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about it now, who are you without the alcohol?
So I would have to say I'm more confident. It's so wild. I mean, I have like, in since I also left like a toxic relationship, I'm coming into this like beautiful, sexy, confident woman. I definitely feel a lot more like sexy when now that I'm like alcohol, like free spirit or sober. I don't know what it is. I feel like I'm tapping into like my divine, like feminine energy. So that I feel more creative, I feel more productive, I feel more focused and committed to the goals and like dreams and aspirations that I have for myself. And gosh, I could just go on and on. It's like, I feel like I'm finally the person that I know I always was, like, and I don't really struggle with social anxiety anymore. You know, I see a therapist. So it's just like everything came full circle for me. And it's like, wow, like these are the things that I wanted that I was trying to find in alcohol, and alcohol never gave that to me. And it was, I realized I had to let alcohol go in order for me to live my like full potential.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And it's great to hear that you have a therapist. I think if it's okay, we can talk more about that experience for you later. But you mentioned, so you were previously in a toxic relationship. Is this the same relationship where the person told you, like, I think you need to take a break from alcohol?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Actually, it was, yeah.
What was that like for you when you were in that relationship and drinking?
So in that relationship, we kind of started out both, you know, drinking pretty, like we go out with friends and drink together. And at the time, I could tell the relationship was toxic even from the beginning. And I would put up with a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have, but because I was drinking, you know, I really didn't have that good discernment and that filter. And I would just kind of, you know, make excuses for him and also myself. And I would tell myself like, oh, well maybe, you know, you need to be more like confident and more secure, or, you know, like, in, if you were, like, you wouldn't be feeling this way. So I almost felt like it was my fault for feeling what I was feeling, even though he was doing things that rubbed me the wrong way and that like we're crossing boundaries with other like females. So the drinking didn't help. And I kind of noticed that whenever I was stressed from the relationship, I was drinking, you know, more heavily. So I noticed that my drinking actually escalated in that relationship because I was so stressed and lonely. And I just felt like so insecure and not confident in that or safe in that relationship because of the things he was doing and saying. Mm. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. And also sounds like a bad cycle. Like there's stress in relationship and then to cope with that, you drink, but because the drinking is escalating now, there's maybe more problems in the relationship. And then it continues on until I imagine, I mean, you mentioned that this person is your ex, at some point, like it just wasn't serving you anymore or him. It just wasn't a functional or fulfilling relationship anymore for what you both needed it to be.
Yeah, for sure. And we actually split about 2 months ago. Actually it'll be 2 months this month. And I think like had I not gotten sober or free-spirited, I probably would have never left that relationship and I would have just kept taking those hits. And I realized, you know, like wow, like I feel like I stepped into my power and I realized that the relationship wasn't serving me anymore. And he probably wasn't happy either. You know, we probably just weren't happy with each other. And I'm really glad that I made that decision to finally leave like 2 months ago.
And so that breakup is still really raw and new for you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And with alcohol, because this is a sex podcast as well, I'm curious, like how did alcohol affect your sex life?
Okay. So this, oh my gosh, this can go like really deep. But so whenever I was drinking, especially when I was single, there was a lot of sex going on. there was a lot. Like I even think about it and I was like, oh my gosh, I was giving myself to so many like strangers. You know, when you drink, you're like, one night stand, hook up, woo woo. Yeah. And I've always found myself to be in monogamous. I'm like kind of a serial monogamous. I actually like being in relationships, but when I wasn't, there was a lot of sex going on. And then I also noticed whenever I was, you know, in relationships and I was drinking, I thought the sex was great and I like could be my free, confident, you know, sexy self. But then when I think about it, like, I don't really think I was very sexy. And I really didn't enjoy sex. I enjoy sex more now that I'm sober than I was when I was drinking. I don't know if I could feel more or if I'm more like in tune and more connected, but I really enjoy sex now that I'm sober.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the being in tune and connected because, I mean, alcohol can numb emotions, but it can also numb sensations. I mean, depending on how much we drink. I'm saying we because I've had these experiences myself, especially when I was in undergrad of university where I go out and I drink and hook up with people and think that it was a great time. But like, if I think back on it, I'm just like, was it really, was it really as like great as I like, I'm telling myself to justify that it happened. So I'm curious for you, like, you know, thinking back on these relationships, these sexual relationships you had while intoxicated, what was that like? Even the, like waking up from the next day, hungover, and like all the things that come with the consequences of drinking attached.
Yeah, yeah. So especially whenever there was like one night stands or just like hooking up, I remember waking up the next morning and just, you know, having that pit in your stomach. Just thinking like, oh my gosh, I did this again. And then, you know, when you drink and you're out and you drink heavily, you don't really even you don't remember the sex. It's right. Just kind of wake up and you're just like, you think like, oh my gosh, did we have sex? And then of course, then that's when the shame and guilt comes in. And then you're like, oh my gosh, well, this is for me. But you know, you think like, oh my gosh, like I'm such a slut or I'm a whore. Like, how could I do this? Then, you know, when you're drinking and you're intoxicated and you're in the moment, you know, you feel so like, like free and you feel like, oh my gosh, like I'm doing this and I feel so sexy and alive. But then it's so crazy because then the next morning you wake up and you're like, why did I do that? It's almost like you're like two different people.
Yeah.
Two different mindsets. And you don't even remember the sex.
And once you were sober, but that month, we're like, okay, this is for a month. And then it lasted a year and, did you say 7 months, 8 months?
Yeah, a year and 7 months.
Year and 7 months now. You know, up until 2 months ago, you said you were still dating this person. So what was your sex life after you stopped drinking like?
It was actually really good. I feel like it got better. I remember one time I had sex and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know, cause I'm 31. So it's like, I hear when you get older, especially as a woman in your 30s, sex becomes really great. But I was like, wait, is it because I'm in my 30s or is it because, you know, I'm not drinking anymore? But I was like, oh my gosh, like the sex was so great. And I always had this fear that like sex wouldn't be that great without alcohol. And now I'm like, sex is so much better. Cause yeah, you're not numb and you feel everything. Yeah. So yeah, it definitely improved.
And I wonder, so for you, being that did get better, I wonder, sex sober can be really vulnerable because you're not numbing, your inhibitions are lower, less impulsive. And then you remember everything about the sexual experience. So I wonder, like, are there times in the past or currently where it felt vulnerable or like uncomfortable, like an awkward way to have sex when you first started to become sober and not use alcohol to have sex or with the sex?
Yeah. So I will say I did feel more vulnerable when I, you know, wasn't intoxicated having sex because, yeah, you do feel so much and you don't have that like liquid courage per se to just make you do these wild things. But in a way, I feel like I was more vulnerable and more open, but it allowed me to receive more from the experience, mm-hmm. you know, because I was so open, because I was so free. And then when that started happening, it also, I think that built my confidence because I realized, okay, I can, you know, dance in my little sexy outfit and, you know, have a great time and be like confident and sexy without alcohol and still enjoy the experience and not drink. And it's like, wow, like it feels so empowering to just know that like, wow, I'm like sexy and confident and like doing these like things that I thought I would only be able to do with alcohol.
Right.
So turn, it like makes you more confident and more empowered as a woman. So yeah.
As you're talking about it, I think of the word pleasure, like being able to feel your sexiness and to get in touch with your like femininity and access that power that was numbed or suppressed with alcohol. Like there's just like a huge, I know people can't see if they're listening to the podcast, but you have a huge smile on your face and you just sound like so happy, so happy with yourself and your confidence and like where you are in life and just like feeling yourself and like really like proud of like where you are and
yeah.
who you are and like rocking that energy.
Yeah, thank you. For sure. For sure. Yeah. I definitely find that I'm like more like, yeah, rocking my energy, like kind of like, yeah, I don't know how to explain it. My friend actually said, because she's like dating, and so she was like, I'm just gonna tap into my like boss bitch flow. I hope I can curse on her, but I kind of like feel like I'm like tapping into that, not like really boss B, but more like confident B and like confident and radiant B. Like that's how I feel. Yeah.
And what was the decision to end the relationship with your ex?
Yeah. So the reason why I decided to end that relationship was as I became to grow and build myself, I'm not sure if my ex was threatened by that or he felt like he was losing that control because he was controlling. He had a little bit of like narcissistic tendencies. So I feel like as I got stronger and more empowered, he wasn't able to control me as much. And so my decision ultimately was I knew that I deserved better. And it was during the time when like the Black Lives Matter movement was going on. I had just finished my yoga teacher training. There were so many things happening in my life. And I feel like he wasn't being very supportive at all. So I made the decision. I said, you know what? I'm going to move out. You know, I still want to keep like the relationship going to see if it works out. And he told me, he was like, well, because you're moving out, there's going to be consequences and we're not going to talk for a month. And so I was sad and hurt, but in a way, I'm looking back on it and it was a blessing. You know, it was such a blessing to get out of that relationship. And I'm so happy that I made the decision to move out and to end things because I feel I'm much happier and more free now.
Yeah, good.
With him. Yeah.
And like the whole consequence thing, like I made a face when you said that. I was just like, huh? So like you made the choice to do something for yourself with the intention of still working on the relationship or at least trying. Was that originally?
Yeah. So like trying and kind of doing things separately because I feel like he didn't think I was independent and he was like, it was very smothering. So I found that I needed to leave so I can like kind of regain my independence and he could see that I'm like, I can do this on my own.
Yeah. And so instead he wanted to punish you by saying, well, because you're going to do this for yourself and because you want to grow in this way, I'm not going to talk to you for a month.
Yeah. Yeah. And so looking back on it, I was just like, no, I'm so happy that I ended up getting out. And I'm happy that he actually made that decision to stop talking to me for the month, because had he not, I probably would have still been in the relationship, you know?
That's true. So it was a weird, well, not weird, but like, not necessarily the best reaction to you wanting to do that, but it was maybe the reaction that helped you to assess things and actually see like, okay, this is actually done. We are done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
One thought that I had and wanted to go back to is you mentioned so recently with Black Lives Matter happening that you didn't feel supported in what was going on from your partner, from your boyfriend. Can you tell us more about that? Because when you said that, I was curious about like what was happening that was maybe a problem or like a realization like, oh, this person isn't supportive in this kind of bigger way for me.
Yeah. So I went to a few protests and it was my first time ever going to a protest. I think just after, you know, the murder of George Floyd, it just really struck something in me. And I wanted, now that I'm sober, I feel like I'm able to use my voice more. And I went to a few protests and initially he was, you know, he's African-American as well. You know, and it would have been really great for him to come to the protest with me just to be there in solidarity and just support me through it. And he never really wanted to go. And I get it. He just said that, you know, the way he wants to use his voice is just by taking action, not just protesting. And I respect that. But I remember I went to another protest and it was at night and he made the comment and he said, oh, well, if you're not back, you know, in a few days, I'm going to replace you with someone else, like another girlfriend.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Instead of just saying like, okay, I support you. Like, do you want me to come with you? You know, be safe, have fun. Like, I'm proud of you for doing this. Like, you know, you're awesome. It was just saying that he was going to replace me if I didn't come home because I was dumb for going out to protest. And, you know, I was putting myself in a dangerous situation. And yeah, so that, and there was like a few other things that happened over the weekend that was just kind of like, wow, like I was just so taken aback. And, you know, I had one of my like good friends and her daughter, like we went to the protest together and we made signs. And I was like, oh my gosh, like you guys are here and supporting me in this. And my ex or my boyfriend like isn't even showing up, you know?
And threatening you by saying like, yeah, you know, if you go to these things or if you don't come back home by X amount of days, then I'm gonna replace you. I can see how he, from as you're describing it, like had these different control tactics to try to maybe in some ways keep you, like you said, from growing or from being able to do and move differently. And you're already, especially now that you're sober, like you're soaring and flying, and he wasn't comfortable with that for whatever his own reasons and his stuff is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was curious because a lot of people I've heard from other couples, like how the Black Lives Matter movement and what's being posted on the news about it has caused issues within family dynamics or even relationships romantically, which I guess if a partner has never really had an opportunity to have these conversations with your partner before, then it might be like new to hear these things. But from like people I've talked to, it was new to hear like their partner's personal beliefs about different things or their political leanings or how they saw racism in America. And it just like catches them by surprise. And it's been really hard to have these conversations amongst family, parents, grandparents, friends, boyfriends, mm-hmm. girlfriends. So yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I imagine a lot of people through COVID and all kinds of political things happening, basic human rights issues happening, it's been hard to navigate and figure out with people that they really care about.
Yeah, for sure. And I've even heard, you know, different, like the dynamics where there's a partner who says things that are kind of hurtful and they don't understand. And, you know, I've also seen on the latter where, you know, they don't understand, but then the other partner kind of educates them and they're more aware.
Yeah.
So definitely so many different family dynamics. I remember seeing a video that went viral where she was a Caucasian girl. She was a teenager and she was standing up, you know, to her parents, and they were saying really hurtful things, and she shared it, you know, and she said that this is hurtful. Like, you don't say these things, you know, how can you think this way? So it was a very pivotal moment. I think a movement for everybody. It opened a lot of people's eyes for sure.
Hey again, just wanted to drop some quick info for you. The Sex and Podcast has a Patreon. Click the link in the show notes to head on over to the Patreon page and take a look at the different membership options. One exciting thing I'm offering to exclusive members are handmade pottery gifts made especially for Sex and members by Mai Boo, the owner of Mark Moeller Pottery. So if you want to drink some coffee or tea while listening to the show, check out the Patreon. Okay, back to the episode. You mentioned, well, before we actually started recording the podcast, you mentioned that alcohol and mental health are so intertwined with each other, especially relating to trauma. So I was curious if it's comfortable to share if there was anything that was important for you to tell about your story in regard to trauma.
Yeah. Ooh, this is a great question. I'm trying to like think of the like pieces and things that I want to say. But I just wanted to share, you know, for those who are listening, if you've been through any type of, you know, traumatic experience, or you've been in a relationship, or you've seen certain things in your life and you're using alcohol or drugs to cope with those things, it's just not worth it. You know, it's just not in the moment. It helps for a second, but then once you come back out of it, you're not really addressing the root to what is causing you to drink and use substances. So, you know, it really helped to put the alcohol down so I can sort through those traumas and those pains and kind of become the woman that I am today. You know, we've all been through things in our lives, and it's hard. You know, life can be really hard sometimes, but you know, it's beautiful to be able to work through those things and move through those traumas and those experiences clear-minded, with clarity, with people who understand and support you. And you know, maybe you can mend those other relationships that cause the trauma in the first place, if it's, you know, feels right. So Yeah, I think that's just my experience with trauma and alcohol.
And what supports have you found as you are now sober and working through whatever trauma background that you have in your personal life? What's helped you to work through those things?
Yeah, so I would have to say I see a therapist. She's helped me a lot, you know, with those things that I'm going through, and she's helped me with my confidence and being more secure in myself. I would also have to say being around more sober women has also really helped in my journey, and just hearing their stories and just being vulnerable and sharing our experiences and feeling like I'm not alone and I'm not a failure and things that I did don't define me. Those terrible things that happened in my past don't really define me. And so just tapping into that support is really helpful. I would have to say like the Instagram community has also been so helpful. Yeah, so helpful. And then just podcast, reading, and a lot of yoga and meditation.
Can you tell me about your yoga practice? Because I saw that you are 200-hour certified yoga instructor.
Yeah. So I have been practicing yoga on and off for about 7 years. Right before I finished nursing school, I went to my first yoga class before my boards. And I remember leaving yoga like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like, this is so good. So after that, I almost say like yoga found me. Like I didn't really find yoga. So I practiced yoga for 7 years and I always aspired to teach yoga. And I never really had the courage to do so. And so, yeah, I enrolled. Something told me like, okay, now is the time. So I enrolled in a 200-hour, you know, yoga teacher training in spring 2020. And I finished in May. And now I'm a yoga teacher. And I feel like my little like business that I just created, Sultry Yoga, is taking off. And it just, everything feels in such alignment. So yeah.
Congratulations on that. And so you have your own yoga business. You're working on your personal journey and you're able to find ways to also make this into a business, yes, but also find community with it and help others who are looking for support in the same way as that finding other women who are sober and free-spirited was a support for you. And being that person in another person's life who's following you or just keeps track of what you're doing and how you're doing and feeling really inspired and motivated by your vulnerability on social media and your capacity to show your growth and your vulnerabilities in that way so that other people don't feel alone in this process.
Yeah, thank you. That's so beautifully stated. That's exactly what it is, you know? And I mean, teaching yoga, I'm not really doing it for the like money or business per se. It's just, it feels really good empowering other people in their journey, you know, whether they're sober or whether, you know, they just are depressed and they need, you know, something to help, or if they just want to work on their flexibility. Like I love like being that for that community. Yeah. So what you said is awesome. So true.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that feels important to share, either with alcohol, mental health, or sexual fulfillment, healing, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I just want those who are listening to know that, I mean, my motto is, you know, you can live a free-spirited life by being free of alcohol. And I always felt that I was this free spirit, you know, growing up, but I thought that I needed alcohol to really tap into that free spirit that I thought I was. But I realized now that I don't drink, I'm more of a free spirit now than I ever have been. And free spirited in a way where I'm able to go out and enjoy the simple things in life. I'm able to have a great time without alcohol. I'm more like adventurous and just more willing to do things and You know, I finally was able to adopt a dog, and I've been waiting for so long for the right dog. And yeah, it's just like all these things have come full circle. So I just want people to know that, you know, you can be this free spirit, and you can, you know, you don't need alcohol in order to do so. And you can enjoy life to the fullest.
Yes. And that is, yes, that's beautiful. And I'm glad that, you know, you're able to find that within yourself. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we haven't touched base on before we wrap up. What do you think?
Oh, I guess I'll share about my dog that I adopted.
Yes, please.
So after, I've been wanting a dog for a while. I've just been it hasn't been like the right time and, you know, the right space. And so I finally, after I moved, I was like, okay, I want a dog. And then I started dog sitting my friend's senior dog, Osito, because she went out of town for a month. And so I'm dog sitting him, and he's an older guy. And I just felt called after being with Osito. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I really want to foster or adopt senior dogs because they need loving as well. So I like searched, and like finally once I like opened the gate of, okay, I'm going to adopt a senior dog, all of these senior dogs started coming my way. And then I found Sabrina on Craigslist, and she was so sweet. And then I asked her owner, you know, what happened. And she said that her owner, you know, abused alcohol and was an alcoholic. And, you know, she couldn't care for Sabrina. And then whenever she would come out of her alcoholic states or like after heavy drinking, she would go and get her back from like the Humane Society. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what happened if she was like on the streets and they found Sabrina. But anyways, long story short, when she told me that, I was like, wow, you know, and her foster mom said it was time to like break that cycle. Yeah. So I found really interesting that how she came into my life. It's like full circle. Like I am now like alcohol free and sober, and I found Sabrina, and it's just really awesome because like she'll never have to experience that sensation of being neglected or seeing her owner, you know, being intoxicated. So I just wanted to share that. I was like, wow, this is so cool. You know, like, so I wanted to share that.
And also, like, in the same way that it impacts kids, like, imagine animals, especially dogs, cats, like, how difficult that must be for attachment to always be taken away from the owner and the owner not be fully present and available to give them the love and care that they need. And maybe not even, like, the basic needs if, like, maybe the person has been binging for days or weeks or whatever that is and just like doesn't have the capacity to take care of themselves, let alone their dog. So yeah, being able to give her a new home and like break that trauma cycle for your dog as well. Sabrina is her name.
Sabrina, yeah. She's so sweet. Like last night we like cuddled in bed and she's just a doll. She's a really good dog.
And you got her, so you got her yesterday?
Yeah, I met her like a few days ago. And I wasn't going to bring her home soon because I'm still like watching Osito, but I was like, okay, let me just see how they'll interact. And they love each other. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, okay, I'm going to take her now as opposed to like waiting a week. So yeah, last night was her first night with me.
What's it like so far to like have that love from another animal, but also to like take care of something? And like you mentioned being a plant lady, and in similar ways, just being able to put love and energy into something and watch it grow is such a healing process. I remember I used to have a dog. His name was Rascal. He died 4 years ago now. And he was my childhood dog. And when I moved to college, he stayed with my parents. And so throughout all my different moves and my different life changes, he's always been with my parents. So I already had a lot of guilt about not having him in my life, even though like I saw him as my dog and he was very much attached to me. So always leaving him behind was really hard, but he was also old and like he didn't do well being in new environments. He just wanted to be in the home he was raised in. So when he died, like it really messed me up a lot. And there was a plant at my job in Seattle that I would nurture and take care of. And that was like the thing that helped me to heal a lot was being able to take care of this plant, which was like barely hanging on. Like it was this plant that was in this office space for like 20 years that no one was like really taking care of, but like once Rascal died, I decided, like, okay, like, this is going to be my plant. I'm going to take care of it now. And it was just so healing to, like, see it grow and to trim it and nurture it and, like, give it the energy and growth opportunities that it needed to thrive. And it was like, I didn't realize it, or maybe I did understand at the time, but it was just like part of my grief process. So yeah, what's it like for you to put energy into now Sabrina, but also your plants or other things that you like to nurture?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing that. That's so beautiful. And I, being a plant mom, just like, or being, just taking care of plants, it's very healing, you know, and just seeing the plants grow and thrive. It is like a way, like, you're taking care of something and you're seeing it grow. And it's a reminder for me, especially taking care of plants. It's a reminder to take care of myself and to give myself water and to give myself love and compassion. And I'm like looking at my plants as I talk about it. Just being able to just like offer that love and compassion to a plant and now a dog. It's so like healing, and it allows you to, it's a good reminder that, you know, just like we give these things love, we have to also give ourselves love in return. And yeah, it's just like, I'm so happy that I have like a dog to care for now, because in a way, like, it also like makes me more active, because like we got up this morning, we went for a walk, and it just like, I would have to say it is like a constant reminder, and it is helping me with like my grieving process and just kind of like owning my power. Cause I remember my ex also, he would tell me like, oh, like, you know, you can't even care for plants. So like, how are you going to have a dog or a baby? And it was like, okay, watch. And I like now have like over 20 plants and a dog and I'm like thriving. So it's just like really cool to see. Yeah.
I'm glad they got a relationship, because it sounds like he really tried to keep you down in different ways. And now that you're able to separate yourself from that, even though I'm sure it's still painful, I mean, it was only 2 months ago and it might hurt from time to time. And, you know, relationships are complicated. I'm sure there are things that you do miss about him, but that you are like proving him wrong, not just like to prove him wrong, but also to prove to yourself that you can do this and that you are doing it, and being able to give yourself the things that maybe you didn't feel like you could or that you deserved while in that relationship.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. It's beautiful. And yeah, it's more so not, I like how you said that. It's not really like proof to him. It's more so to prove to myself that I can do this, you know, and I am enough and I'm worth it. And I'm worth all these amazing things, you know, and I deserve it. So yeah.
Yeah. So Lindsay, how can people find you if they want to contact you or follow you on social media?
Yeah. So, you can find me on Free of Spirits. So it's like all one word. So Free of, and then Spirits _. And then if you want to practice and do some yoga with me, I am offering online, Zoom classes. They are free. And then if you're in the San Diego area, I also am offering in-person yoga classes, and you can follow me under Soul Tree Yoga. So it's, Soul, like Soul Tree, T-R-Y _yoga. So Soul Tree Yoga _.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm working on a website, so to be continued.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciated talking to you and hearing your story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Megan. I appreciate it. It was really fun.
Be sure to subscribe to the Sex and Podcast to get weekly updates on the latest episodes. Also, I would love it if you left a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Tell me and others what you love about the show and even what could be better. All feedback is welcome, because it'll help make the show the shit. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.